The Poem of the Man God. Revelation to Maria of Altorda. Preface. These writings are private revelation given to a pious bedridden woman, Maria of Altorda, during the times of World War II. They flesh out the Gospels and detail the day-to-day life of Jesus and Mary. There are several other visionaries recognized by the Church who were given this gift, but none approach the accuracy and detail of Maria's writings. There have been several minor modifications made to this text, because it was prepared for the purpose of generating an audio version for the blind and visually impaired, via computer-generated voices. A small fraction of punctuation used, and some run-on sentences created an obstacle for the text-to-speech engine, TTS. These obstacles were modified just enough to overcome the TTS impasse. Furthermore, the book was initially translated from Italian into a British English dialect, in which some words were not recognized and needed to be changed or modified to satisfy the speech engine. In some instances, the text makes use of words that may be foreign to the listener. We took the liberty of following them with explanations obtained from the Encyclopedia Britannica for clarification. For example, the word dromedaries, which describes specially bred camels, and the word kyama, which is an Ethiopian garment of pure silk. In addition, units of measurement are expressed in the metric system. Hence, we took the liberty of including immediately afterwards an English units conversion. The audio version incorporates all 5 books. Each book resulted in about 40 hours of audio. The total audio version contains over 200 hours of material. Maria of Altorda was born in Italy in 1887 and passed away in 1961. She was rendered handicapped by an assailant in 1920 and eventually became bedridden in the late 1930s. When her condition became progressively worse, Jesus appeared to her during her holy suffering and called her to be his mouthpiece. From 1943 to 1954, she was given private dictations and detailed revelations of the entire messianic cycle, from the birth of Mary through the coronation. Her spiritual director was Father Miglorini, and the original editor of her works was Michael Pisani. There has been a long-standing controversy regarding these works. There are many supporters as well as opponents. Our essential response is that the sheep know the Master's voice. Information on the Church's position on these works will be covered first, then a review of several arguments made for and against the poem.
Initially, Maria of Altorda's writings had the Roman Catholic Church's highest level of support, the consent of the Holy Father, Pope Pius XII himself. Father Corrado Imbruti, who reviewed Maria's writings and assisted by providing theological notes, decided to consult with several church officials for procedural advice when presenting these writings to the church hierarchy. This was necessary because Maria of Altorda's writings originated from supernatural dictations and visions. Father Berti was able to secure guidance from His Excellency Monsignor Alphonse Carinci, who was then Secretary of the Sacred Congregation of Rites, and Reverend Augustin Bay, who was then Confessor to Pope Pius XII. Monsignor Carinci and Reverend Bay advised him to present typed copies to His Holiness Pope Pius XII. Father Berti and Father Miglorini followed this advice, and with assistance were able to present a typed copy to Pope Pius XII for his assessment in 1947. After spending a year studying Maria of Altorda's writings, Pope Pius XII granted a special audience on February 26, 1948 to Father Berti, Father Miglorini and Father Andrew Sachin to express his personal evaluation. The pontiff ordered the priest to publish Maria of Altorda's writings without omitting anything. Immediately after the meeting, Father Berti, Father Miglorini, and Father Sachin wrote down the exact wording of the papal order, "Publish this work as it is." There is no need to give an opinion on its origin, whether it be extraordinary or not. Whoever reads it will understand. These days we hear of so many visions and revelations. I am not saying that all of them are true, but there can be some of them that are authentic. Furthermore, this papal audience with Fathers Berti, Sachin, and McLaurin, he was historically documented by Cardinal Edward Agnon in 1948, who referred to Pope Pius XII's action as an official imprimatur granted before three reliable priest witnesses. Furthermore, consider this, that in the United States, a last will and testament is recognized by a court of law with only two witnesses, even if the assets are valued in the billions of dollars. This verbal, valid, infallible, papal approval was witnessed and documented by Father Romualdo Migliorini, OSM, Father Corrado Berti, and Father Andrew Sachin, the prior of the International College of the Servites of Mary in Rome. They were three highly credible priests with impeccable backgrounds as witnesses. Furthermore, the Code of Canon Law, Book 2, Part 2, Section 1, Chapter 1, Article 1, gives the Pope full and supreme power over all levels of the Church, and frees to exercise this power. Canon law clearly requires that this papal order be embraced with unconditional acceptance and submission. This is why Father Berti was so persistent in assisting in the publishing of Maria's works, despite the later persecutions he suffered at the hands of his superiors. The advice given to Father Berti by Monsignor Carinci and Reverend Bay to bypass the levels of church hierarchy and go straight to the Pope came at a great cost. Apparently, this circumnavigated papal imprimatur snubbed those heading the Holy Office, who considered it their responsibility to discern the nature of this private revelation, and evidently considered it an evasion of the authority of the Magisterium. As any person in a bureaucracy is well aware, going over a supervisor's head to the CEO can often have dire consequences. 1 year later, in 1949, Cardinal Alfredo Ottaviani, who then headed the Holy Office, summoned Father Corrado Berti and Father Sage into the Holy Office. Furthermore, during this meeting both priests were forbidden to speak or communicate in any way. Monsignor Pepi and Father Baruti, officials of the Holy Office, were entrusted with informing both priests of the new judgment that reversed and undermined the papal imprimatur. This reversal commanded Father Berti to deliver to the Holy Office all of Maria Altorta's manuscripts and typescripts to be destroyed or kept shut away forever. Although Father Berti brought all the typescripts in his possession, he could not deliver all the copies because some were in the possession of other people who declined to be deprived of them. The Holy Office, headed by Cardinal Alfredo Ottaviani, forbade the publication of these writings and threatened to place them on the index of forbidden books in the event of a publication. The order of silence cleverly restricted Father Berti from informing Monsignor Pepi and Father Baruti of the papal imprimatur given by Pope Pius XII. At this point it would be prudent to mention that it has only recently been discovered that this Cardinal Ottaviani is also the highly controversial author of the scandalous 1962 secret Vatican policy that stunned the world. This policy was uncovered by CBS News and disclosed in an August 6, 2003 article entitled Sex Crimes Cover-Up by Vatican. This Cardinal Alfredo Ottaviani policy mandated the church hierarchy, under the penalty of excommunication, to protect pedophile priests that repeatedly molested young children. The document imposed an order of absolute silence, and the violated child victims, their grieved families, and witnesses to the crime, also under penalty of excommunication. Furthermore, it served as a guide to insulate pedophile priests from civil authorities by moving them from parish to parish. Many investigating agencies concluded that this Cardinal Ottaviani policy was the single greatest cause of the recent child molestation scandal in the Roman Catholic Church. This 2003 CBS sex crimes discovery, coupled with the knowledge that it was under this same Cardinal Ottaviani that a papal imprimatur was surreptitiously reversed, it gives new light to the grievous persecutions of Maria Altorta and her writings. It is amazing that some people will give more weight to the condemnation of Maria Altorta's writings under this wayward cardinal than to a papal imprimatur that was witnessed by three priests with signed statements and logged at the Vatican by Cardinal Edward Agnon.
Still feeling subject to acceptance of, and submission to, the original papal order that they heard with their own ears, the Servite priests gathered a huge amount of support to present to the Vatican. This backing included certifications of Maria Viltorta's writings from the Secretary of the Sacred Congregation of Rites, Archbishop Monsignor Alphonse Carinci, from Father Bay, S.J.,
from the Dean of the Lateran Theological Faculty and Consultant to the Holy Office Monsignor Latanzi, from the Dean of Consistorial Counselors for the Holy See and a teacher at the Lateran Professor Camillo Corsanigo, and from the renowned Mariologist of the Pontifical Marianum and Lateran Theological Faculty Father Gabriel Rossini, OSM. As a note, Pope John Paul II called Father Gabriel M. Rossini one of the greatest Mariologists who ever lived. He was a decorated professor at the Marianum Pontifical Faculty of Theology in Rome, and an advisor to the Holy Office. He wrote over 130 books on the Blessed Mother, all of which are in the Vatican Library. His last book, which Gabriel said was his greatest, was The Virgin Mary in the Writings of Maria Viltorta. It is in our opinion that Cardinal Alfredo Ottaviani was so blinded by indignation over the circumnavigated church approval that he never considered that these revelations could actually be authentic. The sequence of events strongly supports and verifies this premise. Persistent attempts by Fathers Berti, Sachin and Miglorini to gain another audience with Pope Pius XII was strategically and tightly blocked. If the Holy Office allowed any of these priests to have another audience with the Pope, it would be a foregone conclusion that he would realize that his imprimatur was being subverted. That would put Cardinal Ottaviani in a very precarious predicament. The Servite priests were eventually chastised and separated. Ultimately, Father Corrado Berti went to the Pisani Publishing Company. Of course, obedience to the papal order takes precedence over lower levels of the church bureaucracy. The Poem of the Man God was published in 1956 with Pope Pius XII's imprimatur and statement affixed to the inside cover. This must have made Cardinal Ottaviani livid, but he had no choice but to wait. Placing the poem on the index of forbidden books would require a papal signature. If they placed the decree in front of the Pope for signing, he would certainly recognize Viltorta's work. The Holy Office had to wait 3 long years. When Pope Pius XII passed away on October 9, 1958, the line was finally out of the way. As soon as the next pontiff, Pope John XXIII, took office, the congregation's first and foremost action was to have Maria Viltorta's writings formally condemned on the Index of Forbidden Books in 1959. Cardinal Ottaviani could then place the decree with the backlog of documents requiring papal signatures. Obviously, the Pope doesn't scrutinize all the material personally. That task is routinely delegated to the congregation. It would be possible to have the decree signed with a simple statement, such as, "The congregation determined that these writings should be placed on the index. Please sign here." It was a long wait, but in 1959, the deed was done. This subversion and undermining of papal authority may be one of the darker moments in the history of the Roman Catholic Church. In 1961, Father Berti was able to secure an audience with Pope Paul VI's private secretary Monsignor Pasquale Macchi. Monsignor Macchi informed Father Berti that Pope Paul VI, when he was Archbishop of Milan, had read the first volume of the poem and was impressed enough to have the whole work sent to the Milan Seminary Library. Father Berti gave Monsignor Macchi a copy of the second edition of the poem for review. Later that year, Father Berti was summoned to the Holy Office by Father Mark Gerardo O.P., Commissioner of the Congregation. Father Berti informed the Commissioner of Pope Pius XII's order to publish the poem in 1948. Monsignor Macchi directed Father Berti continue to publish the second edition. We will see how the world receives it. In 1966, Pope Paul VI took the action of suppressing the Index of Forbidden Books, which liberated the poem from ecclesiastical restriction. There are many people who argue that this action was taken specifically to liberate the poem, allowing church compliance to the original order by Pope Pius XII. Unfortunately, the Roman Catholic Church has on occasion mistakenly condemned innocent victims and later exonerated them when modern science or contemporary deductive reasoning shed new light on the issue. One example would be How Roman Catholic Church Hierarchy Placed Galileo's Writings on the Forbidden Book List. They burned his written observations, and nearly burned him at the stake in order to force him to retract his ideas regarding the earth being round and orbiting the sun. He was brutally compelled to sign retractions stating that the world was actually flat and located at the center of the universe. A few church officials may have fallen into the trap of persecuting today's saints, just as the Jewish leaders and the Sanhedrin persecuted the Messiah 2,000 years ago. It is important to remember that poor fishermen were able to recognize the Christ when the chief priests, doctors of the law, and Pharisees condemned him. Before the 2003 CBSX crimes discovery, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger was approached several times to review the Church's position on Maria Viltorta's writings, but he refused to overturn the condemnation under Cardinal Alfredo Ottaviani. He may have been reluctant, because he served directly under Cardinal Ottaviani. He was groomed by him, and eventually became Cardinal Ottaviani's successor. However, after the CBSX crimes discovery that placed Cardinal Ottaviani as the origin of the shocking pedophile scandal, Cardinal Ratzinger's position on Maria Viltorta's writings seems to have vacillated. It has been divulged by the Bishop of Birmingham, Alabama, that Cardinal Ratzinger has now acknowledged in a private letter that there is nothing against faith or morals in the poem of the Man God and the other writings of Maria Viltorta. This change of position is further supported by statements made by Cardinal Ratzinger at a conference of Italian bishops, as testified by Bishop Roman Danny Lack. Now that Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger has become our reigning pope, those who have been able to recognize the finger of God in Maria Viltorta's writings are optimistic about a reversal of the Church's stance. Hopefully, one day the Church may officially acknowledge the original papal imprimatur given by Pope Pius XII in 1948 before three distinguished priests, that was later overturned in 1959.
There is a long list of powerful supporting testimony for Maria Viltorta's writings, provided by highly credible people including a pope, a cardinal, archbishops, bishops, priests, monsignors, nuns, professors, archaeologists, geologists, mineralogists, and authors. Far too much to be covered in this audio version. This detailed information can be found on several websites such as viltorta.org. This site was made by an Australian group that published a guide that details thousands of accurate cross-references of Maria's writings and the Bible with stunning precision. Another very informative site is operated by a Trappist monk from an abbey. These sites provide long lists of expert testimony. For example, one striking attestation provided by an archaeologist points out how Maria Viltorta described and correctly named several towns and villages that were not even discovered until after her death. In another, a geologist is amazed at the unexplainably precise knowledge of Palestine and panoramic, topographic, geological and mineralogical aspects in Maria's writings. Additional positive affirmations come from Medjugorje visionaries Maria Pavlovich and Vika Ivankovich, who questioned Mary regarding these works and received favorable confirmations. The following is an excerpt from a supporting website. Maria Pavlovich and Vika Ivankovich were specifically requested to ask the Madonna about it. So in 1985, Maria Pavlovich, upon hearing someone ask about the poem, stated that 2 years previously a Franciscan friar had requested her to ask the Madonna about it. The visionary then became very serious and said, "Maria Viltorta. All true. The poem of the Man God. The Madonna said 2 years ago, all true. Dictated by Jesus." Likewise, in an interview with attorney Janice Connell of the Pittsburgh Center for Peace on January 27, 1988, Connell asked the visionary Vika Ivankovich if there were any other books Our Lady had told her about. Vika replied, "Yes, the poem of the Man God by Maria Viltorta. 10 volumes. Our Lady says the poem of the Man God is the truth. Our Lady said, if a person wants to know Jesus, he should read the poem of the Man God by Maria Viltorta. That book is the truth. The poem of the man God received another Medjugorje related approval during a broadcast interview on Mother Angelica's EWTN cable network, which aired an interview with Medjugorje Sierra Marriage of Pavlovic conducted by retired New Orleans Archbishop Philip Hannon. On March 4, 1992, on the Archbishop's Focus program, Bob, a call-in viewer from Milwaukee, asked Marija, on the air, what exactly did Our Lady say regarding the poem of the man God? Marija responded that Our Lady told her, you can read it. There are several other groups and websites that oppose Maria's writings. Because of the wonderful insight her work provides, and the appalling state of the world, it would be amazing if there were no opposition to her writings. We observed that most of the documents opposing the poem of the man God jointly attack the Medjugorje visions as well. Upon examination, arguments in opposition to the poem have been quite easy to counter. Most are simple misleading statements and misquotes that collapse like a house of cards when scrutinized. The following is a good example of this. One of the first arguments encountered was a hostile letter claiming that Mary, in the Vultorta text, makes a statement that she would like to be a big sinner. The antagonist then argues that the Mary we know could not have made a statement like that. He goes on to persuade people to avoid the poem altogether, based on the indication of this quote. The author fails to mention that in this particular vision, Mary is a 2-year-old little girl, and had been informed that the Messiah was coming to save sinners. In the poem, Mary made this statement because she was eager to be saved by the upcoming Messiah. The contender even endeavors to lead the reader to believe that Mary was an adult when making this proclamation. Another opponent wrote an article persuading people from reading the poem because Maria Vultorta gives Mary's birthday as August 26th, and 9 other visionaries have given a date of September 8th. This is an intentional, premeditated misrepresentation. Maria never provides an exact birth date for Mary, although she does clearly indicate the month of September. The antagonist uses the date Maria was given this particular vision to be Mary's actual birthday. The dates of Maria's visions have no correlation to traditional liturgical dates. For example, Maria was given the vision of the birth of our Lord Jesus on June 6th, not December 25th. The author also fails to mention that when describing Mary's birth, Maria writes, in the clear September sky, therefore conveying a September birth, which is in full agreement with other sources. Most of the opposing arguments encountered followed a similar strategic angle or format. Also, it is important to mention that Maria's visions were not given in chronological order, they were arranged into chronological order afterwards. This can be confusing at times when she references something that she had previously seen that the reader has not yet encountered. A few documents reference differences in accounts given by Maria Vultorta and some other prevalent visionaries who have revealed the life of Jesus, particularly that of Anne Catherine Emmerich. Comparisons between the writings of these two visionaries do exhibit differences, as do the 4 Gospels, which also have slight variations. When Maria's text is compared, it shows more precise illustration, and her details pose much more logical sense. Maria Vultorta's writings are so accurate when compared to the Shroud, that books have been written on this one subject alone, for example, The Holy Shroud and the Visions of Maria Vultorta, by Monsignor Vincenzo Suri. Some arguments against the poem are based upon dogmatic adherence to imperfect annotations. For example, several challengers cite that Maria Vultorta saw a screwdriver on a workbench, then proposed verbose arguments that screws were not invented till well over 1,000 years afterwards. In the text she actually says, he is precise and constant in his work. Nothing annoys him, neither a knot in the wood which will not be planed, nor a screwdriver, I think it is a screwdriver, which falls twice from the bench, nor the smoke floating in the room, which must irritate his eyes. The screwdriver mentioned is likely to be a small prying tool or a thin chisel of some sort. There are no references in the poem of this tool being used on screws. Critical adversaries to Maria's writings have stooped as low as fabricating bizarre claims that the poem portrays a homosexual Jesus. This is probably the most outrageous assertion antagonists have promulgated to date. It is a cruel attempt to shock potential readers into avoidance. Here, adversaries distort the meaning of the word caress, which is clearly used by Maria numerous times to describe something as simple as a patting on the back, into some form of a lewd act. The act of Jesus kissing his disciples and vice versa are also employed to argue improper behavior. Obviously, this kissing is a customary greeting of the times. A perfect example would be how we read in our Bible about Judas kissing Jesus in the garden in order to identify Christ to the mob. The Bible is not referring to a lewd act, but to a customary greeting of the era. There was no long separation in this instance. Jesus had recently participated in the Last Supper with Judas only a few hours before. Within some nationalities today, this type of kissing is still a customary greeting. Misquotes were also utilized to further embellish this odious contention. Any reader will quickly find that the poem is so thoroughly interwoven with illustrations of God's eminent reverence for chastity and virginity, along with his utter repugnance of human sensuality, that this accusation becomes untenable. Furthermore, opponents who espouse such malicious calumny are plausibly recognizing this inclination within themselves, certainly not in a misconstrued subtext from the poem. Some critics seem to smell their own stench within their nostrils, and are quick to blame the perfumes of virginal chastity emanating from the poem. The very arguments proposed by those wishing to discredit these works essentially help confirm the antithesis of their contentions. Understandably, the best way to discredit the works would be to highlight contradictions to the Gospels. The poem of the man God consists of 10 volumes that were condensed into 5 books that are over 800 pages each, in small text format. It is apparent from several imprecise quotes that these opponents have reviewed this material meticulously. Since they have been clearly unable to find any contradictions from the Bible, the only remaining method to support their spiteful claims is to form these fallacious arguments. Even the most enthusiastic challengers could not find one biblical error. That alone speaks volumes. Father Padre Pio was a great advocate of Maria Viltorta's writings, and known to recommend reading the poem on many occasions. One year before Padre Pio's death, a woman named Mrs. Elisa Lucchia asked him if he advised reading Maria Viltorta's writings. He replied, "I don't just advise you, I insist that you read them." The following is a supportive letter from Bishop Roman Danny Lack that helps annul the influence of contrary sophists.